Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's the time of the week where we do our interview, and our first guest drives the number 43 Chevy for Richard Petty Motorsports. His name is Bubba Wallace, and I have to admit, I did not realize until I started looking it up that you actually drive the 43.
That's right.
43. How daunting is that?
That's pretty cool. There's a lot of pressure that comes with it and a lot of history that comes with it. You look back on when the king, you know, made it famous, even back to his dad, Lee Petty, started it all for us, and see how that tradition is carried through to today, and it's just a lot of fun.
I feel like you're obligated to have the STP on there if it's the 43. Yeah. Like, that's just like in my childhood, I imagine that is totally with that red, white, and blue 40, with STP car.
Yeah, that's STP's been a long time partner of the 43, and so it's always fun to have them on the car.
Another fun part, we sat down to do this, and a bottle of Coke came out on the table. I was right. Like, damn, it's a little early to be drinking a Coke, but I guess it's not too early when you have a sponsor,
right? That's right. They're paying you. It's always a good time to have
That's a good one to have, though, right?
Yeah, it's such a cool brand to be a part of. We've done a lot of stuff, especially around this weekend, Memorial Day, and doing a lot with our troops, so we're excited about it.
Now, I was telling you before we started, I was going to tell you about the first time I came across you. I was at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention in 2011, and we had a reception, and NASCAR brought you out to talk. And I remember I sat in the room, and I was like, man, if this dude can drive a little bit, he is going to be a star. Like, it was right there. But what I didn't realize at the time is that you were just 18 then. Like, you're 25 now.
In 2011? No, I was only...
I guess 17. My math is bad.
Yeah. What?
Summer of 2011.
Yeah.
And I did not, like, that part I didn't grasp at the time, because you really had a control of the room, like a confidence about you that did not scream out 18 at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even remember that.
Yeah, but.
That's crazy.
The thing I wonder, though, like, you're 25 now, does it feel like you've been doing this forever?
I mean, I've been racing for 16 years and been in the NASCAR ranks since 2010, you know, finally breaking through and getting in the Truck Series in 2013, and. Yeah, I think it does feel like sometimes it feels like really long, but sometimes it's like, man, just the blink of an eye. Yesterday, we were racing go-karts back at home.
But I was going to say, for people who don't know as much about like the path that you take to get into the Cup Series in NASCAR, you say you've been doing it for 16 years. Mm-hmm. So what's racing like when you're 9 years old?
Yeah, 9 years old, you get a go-kart. You know, it's not like you can go to your local sporting goods store and buy a go-kart. You know, you have to know some people or know where the racing shops are to go get one. You spend a lot of time testing and tuning and racing at little local tracks around you. Our first race was a national event down in Florida. Had no idea why we went down there. We weren't even ready for it. But we did that and come back home and kept practicing and trying to get better and better. So I spent about 2 years in every series. Legend car or Bandoleros after that, legend cars, late models, K&N cars. That was right around the time, I guess, we met, 2010, 2011. Full-size stock car I was driving when I was 12.
Really?
Yeah, 13, yep.
That is the most frightening thought in the world to me, the idea of a 12-year-old driving a right. car in general, yeah. a stock car.
Don't need a license, no.
How much fun is that when you're 12, though?
It's cool. I mean, the speeds pick up substantially. The racing's totally different. You get to go to some bigger tracks and feel the actual speed. I remember feeling like I was actually going fast a couple times. In the bigger car, so it's a lot of fun.
So when's the first time for you that you really realized that you could be like somebody at doing this, where it went past doing something because it was fun and you realized there was a path on this?
Yeah, I still don't know if I've realized that yet. I mean, I remember sitting on the grid 2012, last race of the season in the K&N car, and I was like, we had just qualified on the pole, and I was like, man, there's no really need to turn around right now and start over. I didn't have the thought of doing that. I was just sitting there thinking, like, if I did, what would I do? One, I don't know. So I was like, let's keep digging. We went on and win that race. So that was big for us. But I think then it's always been, you know, before then it was always just show up and race. And, you know, I'm with a team now, and here's the schedule, and this is where we'll be every weekend. And that's kind of still how it is. You know, I still have a schedule to you know, go by. And, you know, the next race for us is Charlotte this weekend. And then after that, we go to Pocono, I believe. So it's just taking it race by race. I don't see it as, as anything more than that. I just have a lot of fun each and every weekend.
Now, the 600 is this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for people who are unfamiliar, because I went to some, like, souped-up go-kart track once, and I think it was the first time that I realized, like, how physically taxing driving these cars can be. Because, like, the idea of driving a car making you an athlete heavy, like, okay, what are you talking about? Then my core, as I'm trying to swing around this curve, and, like, Andretti's in Atlanta, which ain't even really nothing to talk about, right? I was like, oh, okay, like, this is something. So, like, for you, what is the most challenging thing about being a race car driver?
There's a lot of obstacles. Obviously, as soon as you get into any sort of spotlight, you're put on a pedestal. You know, that's just, you're not even in the car yet and you're already on a pedestal. So you got to watch everything you do and say. And from the driving side, I think, you know, the 600 is our longest race of the year. It's about an hour longer than the others. It's 600 miles versus 500 miles that we do, and 400 miles. So, it's the physical toll that it takes. I mean, it just, you're depleted after once that checker flag falls. I remember last year we had a decent showing. We finished 19th, finished on a lead lap and ran all the laps. And I remember chasing down the guy in front of us for the last 30 laps maybe, and got to him with like six or seven to go. And the way it works, you start getting into their dirty air, as we call it, and it starts to become a bigger challenge. So you're all of a sudden you're really, really fast. You catch him, and then you kind of stall out when you get within two or three car lengths behind him. And I was like, I have no more to go. And I kind of just rode there behind him for the last seven laps, and I was done. I got out, limped back to the bus, laid out across the floor for a solid 10, 15 minutes. And it took me a second to gather my thoughts back.
It sounds crazy to me to think that, like, guys like Tony Stewart, who would have done the Indy 500, mm-hmm. then jump on a plane or a helicopter or whatever, and then come do 600 more miles.
Yes, yeah, that's asking a lot. I would definitely entertain that idea. It's just, you got to be prepared for it mentally, physically, emotionally.
So you talked about, like, being the driver means that, you know, you get put onto this pedestal. Do you have any moment where you realize for you that, like, oh, this is how I'm going to have to do this because this isn't regular life, you know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've never changed for anybody. And no matter if it's a race or if it's an interview, you know, what you got is what you got. And, you know, I always try to be on professional, but also a lighthearted behavior. I don't like to take things too serious, but at the same time, I got to show people that, you know, okay, he's for real. So there's a kind of a fine line that you have to walk, but the biggest thing is just being yourself and showing your emotion and your heart and your passion. So I try to do that still to this day. You know, I remember growing up and getting into the fights at the track, and just because you're so passionate about wanting to win. And then today, you know, the fights have calmed down a lot, but you're still mad and argue with the team and go talk to your competitor about what happened, and you show that, and you get on camera and you talk about it, and you know, you hold back, you know, a few choice words, but at the end of the day, you get your point across in the way you would want to.
You know, you talk about, like, being who you are and, you know, staying authentic to that, which is not always easy when you're doing something public. Mm-hmm. Has there been pressure, like, anybody leaned on you about changing who you are or how you go about things?
No, my mom's like, stop using so many curse words. But no, I think they used to have us do media training, and I always thought that was the biggest waste of time. Because for us, it's different. You know, we've had a camera in our face for, you know, in racing. You know, you win a go-kart race when you're 9 years old, you're on camera talking, whether it's, you know, to a local media outlet or whatever it is. You're not on TV, but you could be at times, you know, do a local news story. And so just the whole time, I remember listening to my old interviews, and, yeah, I wasn't very good, but it just – who is at 9 years old? You know, you don't, right. You're not born to be great on TV or talk professionally. So you learn that, but we started doing media training and stuff, and they'd have all us drivers in there. And then, we would go on and do our season at the end of the season or after an interview. People are like, man, you're wise beyond your, you know, years, and you're a great interviewer, and you say all this and that, and not a lot of uhs and ands and buts and all that stuff. And, as I just say an right there. And I'm like, yeah. So what's this media training about? Why do we keep going to this? And they're like, this, that, that. So I just, for me, it's always been just be yourself. And even the guys who were training us in media training was like, man, just be yourself. And that's it. And I take that every day. And so that's important.
I feel like it's a little different in NASCAR, where we kind of want you guys to be fun, where we're asking mm-hmm. everybody else to be boring.
Yeah, it's, you know, for us, our sport isn't portrayed in the best light at times. You know, people say, you know, one, we're not athletes. We drive in circles. It's, you know, who can sit there and watch a race for 3 hours and whatnot. Races are too long. It's hot. You know, there, you know, you have some points there. It is hot. Races are long, but there's a lot more to it than just driving around in circles. There's strategy. You know, you show up and, whether you get a group of your buddies to, you know, draw a number out of a hat. This is who I got today. And you pay attention to that car and see, oh, why did he pit on that lap and your guy pitted on this lap? And next thing you know, they come out in totally different spots. And then it starts to kind of tick that that's a lot more to it. There's a lot of strategy. There's a lot of engineering behind it. There's just a lot that goes into our sport that it's hard to explain unless you get out there and physically be a part of it.
And this is also, I guess, one of those things where, like the way I tell people about living in New York, you can't do it if you like it. Like, you have to love it in order to do it. Do you feel that way about this, that if you did not love it, this isn't something you could really see yourself doing?
Oh, absolutely. I do a lot of things that I don't like, and I'm, like, dragging through it. But, you know, you tell me to go climb in any sort of race car, and I'm getting all excited about it and ready to drive the wheels off of it. So I love it. You know, like I said, it's all I know. I mean, going through school, all I thought about was racing. Graduated early just to get out of there and be racing at the racetrack every weekend. Missed out on a lot of social events back at home. I had some friends growing up through high school and through middle school, but it was always like that separation. And then eventually got on my own, and your racing family is your friends and your family. So that was always tough.
And also, like, we talk about high school in that way. Like, if you're on the high school football team, everybody knows that you're the guy who does that, right? Like, while you're in school. But while you're doing this in high school and middle school and you're racing, you know, after school, do the kids at school know that you are the guy on the racetrack?
Oh, yeah. They knew. They knew every time. I remember being on the track team in middle school. That was the last time I played sports, recreational sports, was on the track team. We were in the middle of practice, and I lived less than a mile away from the track. Or from school, and our trailer would pull up. You'd see Wallace racing on the side, and middle of practice. And this is an hour after school was let out. We were like, "All right, I gotta go. We gotta go practice." So I had to eventually quit the track team. I don't even know, a couple races in, and that was it. We just didn't have time for anything else. But everybody knew. I mean, I was picked up from school multiple times, and we had a big, you know, tractor trailer rig. You know, once we got to high school, and it would take up the whole parking lot. And everybody knew it was time for me to leave and be in class. And, hey, can Daryl leave, you know, this week? I was rarely sick. And it was like, what's today, Thursday or Friday? Yep, he's got to go. So,
was it tricky for you with your parents trying to figure out how to balance, you know, the demands of racing with, you know, allowing you to just be a child?
It was different. I mean, my mom was hard on me about, you know, completing the schoolwork and whatnot, and we missed. It's funny, we can talk about it now, but in 2010, we missed. We were only allowed to miss 13 days of school. We missed 67 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so we had to talk. We knew going into it was going to be a lot of days missed, but we had to talk with the board, talk with the principals, teachers, and like, hey, we need a lot of help here. You know, we'll get the schoolwork done. But it was a struggle, you know, for me, sitting there every day knowing, like, oh, they're going to call my name yet? The intercom would ring, and I'd get excited, and it'd be somebody else. Dang. Thought we were leaving today. And then about 20 minutes later, I'd leave. So it was tough there. But at the end of the day, my parents always told me, the biggest thing my parents told me was never give the media anything to talk about. My mom was huge on that. And then my dad and I would go off to the races and just have fun. The biggest thing was to have fun.
How'd your mom handle just the idea of her baby riding around in this fast car?
Yeah, she wasn't a fan of it at first.
Well, the first thing is, like, did she come up in this, or
no.
Was this came around with you?
This came around with me. My dad raced. He tried to race three times in a go-kart. He flipped all three times, so I didn't get my driving from him. But my uncle and my cousin raced a little bit up in Nashville. Nothing on this level at the fairgrounds up there. So she may have been around that a little bit. Not exactly sure, but this is all basically new to her.
Like, I remember the first time I just took a car to go to a football game, and my mother, you would have thought that they were shooting me off into outer space. So I can't imagine your mom watching you going around that track.
Yeah, no, it was, I forgot. I know she wasn't at the first one, but I forgot. I think, it took her a couple races to finally accept it. And then, she's been the biggest supporter ever since.
as this goes now, like, you are an adult and you're doing this. You're 25. You've been second in the Daytona 500 and everything else. How does that change? Like, how has your relationship with your parents evolved as this has gone farther and as you have gotten older?
Yeah, now it's funny. You go through life and a friend of mine told me this. We've been through some family stuff over the last couple of years that has kind of separated us a little bit. It's unfortunate, but a friend of mine told me, it's funny, the older you get, you realize your parents aren't the superheroes you thought when you were kids, and you're like, that's right. Because you in life go through a lot of things that you're like, well, I guess my parents did that. I guess other people go through that too. And then you sit there and think about, like, your teachers and everything. You're sitting there in school, and they show up with a smile every day. Some teachers didn't. You know, you always had that one or two teachers that just didn't want to be there. But you're like, you go through these problems in life, and it's like, I wonder if they did. And I sit there and think about that constantly. It's like, it's life. Life throws everything at you.
And, you know, you've gone through some things lately, and you have been public about some of the things that you've been thinking and feeling lately, yeah, about just kind of the crush and the pressure, yeah, and, you know, perhaps not doing as well as you wanted to in this. So, like, when you're 18, where did you think that you would be at 25 in this?
I didn't. I never thought, like, you know, for me, it was always different. You know, people were like, who's your favorite driver? Did you watch the sport growing up? I didn't watch the sport until I needed to start watching the sport. You know, when I knew we had a shot at being in the truck series in, let's see, that was going to be 2013. So in 2012, I think 2010, we started watching a little bit, but really paying attention and what, you know, ooh, they're doing this, they're doing that. You know, that didn't come about until I was basically in the truck series. And I looked up to a lot of guys and had a lot of help along the way. I mean, I raced for Kyle Busch in the truck series, so he's helped a lot for sure. It's just been, it's been something that I've just kind of done on my own. My dad and I and Chris, the guy who got us started, just kind of did it on our own. And I never thought of, if I win this go-kart race, what's going to happen next? It's like, okay, can we win the next one? Can we win the next one? And then we show up one weekend and go to the house one week, and my dad's like, hey, I'm going to go buy this car. Go race this next year. I'm like, okay. And just, let's go win another race. And next thing you know, we started getting, you know, we got picked up by Joe Gibbs Racing. And still then, I didn't even think of, man, maybe one day I can drive one of his cup cars. It was like, okay, what's the opportunity that we have now? Let's capitalize on that and move on.
See, that's interesting to hear, because I know, like, when I first started doing TV, I remember, like, the first time I got, like, a little TV appearance, I was like, man, I'm going to have a TV show in like a year. And then 10 years later, I get on a TV show consistently. Right. And then 3 years after that, I get on TV. So I was wondering, because I know it can be, if your expectations are a bit outsized in the beginning, it can be difficult to realize that you're just going along the steps that everybody goes along, you know? So it's interesting to hear that for you, it was always just a step-by-step sort of thing.
It always is step-by-step. And don't get me wrong, I like to run wild with my imagination, whether that's in life or if that's in racing. You know, I still have those dreams of like, man, I just won that race, and I wake up and I'm like, what did I? Oh man, I was dreaming that. You know, it's like, man, dang. So you know, I still get excited over that stuff, but at the same time, I know the situation that we are in and the time frame. It just takes a lot of time, a lot of hard work, and determination and grit to get to that next level.
And how good did it feel? It's not winning, but still second place in the Daytona 500 is no joke.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, so those races are, you know, for people that don't know, if you have a car and you have a car that can run the whole time, you have a shot at winning. Just because we're running 200 miles an hour around there, bumper to bumper, it's just like traffic here in New York, just 200 miles an hour. And so one wrong move could wipe out potentially half the field, three quarters of the field. So you start with 40 cars, have one wreck, you wreck 20. Next thing you know, if you were 40th, now you're 20th. You get back going again, another wreck, takes out 10. Next thing you know, now you're 10th. So, you know, we were able to miss four solid wrecks that day, and lined up six on that last restart and got a really good run and shove to push the three out there and barely beating the 11 to get second, and never thought, you know, I would end up second in the 500. It's not again, it goes back to, man, I'm at the Daytona 500 and I just finished second. And it was just like, all right, we just finished second in another race. Awesome. Let's go on to Atlanta.
You really were able to keep it like that? Cause I would have instantly been like, all right, missed five time two right here. Like that would have been where I was after that, especially at like 23, 24.
Yeah. No, it was just one of those things. It's like, you know, I don't get too caught up in the history of the sport. I didn't watch it. You know, obviously I know you know, where our sport, how our sport was created, and the, you know, the foundation of all the legendary drivers and driving for the king. I know all that stuff, but I don't spend too much time thinking like, oh man, you know, a lot of people get excited over, you know, we just won, you know, the Southern 500 at Darlington. I just think of it as whatever the title sponsor of that race is. It's that's, we won that race. Great. On to the next one. So it's different for me. I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, downplaying it at all, but it's just, we still got work to do.
We'll be back in a minute with more with Bubba Wallace. But first, would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? We wouldn't. With Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes. Everlane only makes premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups. They want you to know what you're paying for and why, so they tell you their real costs and are radically transparent about every step in their process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. No matter your style or preference, Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer. Because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. Essentials like their Cotton Crew t-shirt are exactly what they should be. Versatile, simple, stylish, and made from quality materials. 100% grade A cashmere, quality cotton basics, sustainable silks, premium Japanese denim made at the world's cleanest denim factory, Italian-made leather shoes, outerwear made from recycled water bottles, perfectly fit Oxford shirts. And right now, you can check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/Bomani. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/Bomani. everlane.com/Bomani. A couple of times in the last couple of weeks, you've been very public and forward about what the difficulties were have been for you and how you felt as all of this has gone on. I saw one guy make it a point. He said how brave it was for you to be willing to share that. Did you view that as something brave, or just what for you? Was it just something you felt and just said?
I wear my heart on my sleeve. And, you know, I like for the viewers that are listening, you know, I come out about depression and being, you know, down and out, and I show up. And for a kid that, you know, if you could look back on my tweets, I said, with a kid that has a smile each and every weekend, that shows up and tries to be as friendly as I can to anybody and everybody, fans, media, you know, you wouldn't think that you would see some of the dark days. And, you know, I think you fake it a lot. You know, we fake a lot of things in life. And some days you're like, you don't want people to know what's going on. So you show up and you try your best not to portray that. And it wears you down. It definitely takes a toll on you. You know, talking about it and coming out about it, breaking down about it. I didn't know that it would bring in another outlet of people, to conversate with. And I've had people that I've never even talked to before come up and say, man, I appreciate you coming out and talking about that stuff, because, you're not alone. And there's a lot of people that's fighting it, that are, you know, scared to say it. And, you know, and there's some days where I sit there and think of, you know, man, it's kind of embarrassing that we're kind of going through this, and I can see how people don't want to talk about it. But I think, you know, a lot of people have told me the best thing you can do. My mom has definitely told me the best thing you can do is talk about it. Talk about it, cry about it, let it out. And, it's definitely helped.
Were you able to point to what it was that made you feel down?
Well, for sure, it's definitely the race and stuff. I mean, coming from, you know, not the race and stuff has always been a little different. Now it's definitely changing. You know, we would show up and we didn't have much money, but we didn't cut any corners.
Right.
We didn't have millions and millions of dollars like some of these kids coming up through now. And we fought for it. We would show up sometimes run fifth, and that was all we had. And then next 2 weeks, we'd go out and win. And we always had a shot at winning. And then you get up ever since probably 2015, you know, I went winless for 3 years in the Xfinity series. We were at Roush, and we knew that the equipment there was a little bit behind of where we wanted to be, but I was excited to take on a new role and try to get that program up and going. And I gave it my all each and every race, and some races was good enough for 15th. And you're like, oh, this is a total change of pace. So it took me a while. I was very frustrated and pissed off and angry. And, you know, now I've kind of changed my outlook on things because I know where we stand. But, you know, if you don't have that millions of dollars of backing, and on a good team, then you're going to struggle. You're going to show up and not have a shot at all. So if you can change your mindset on that, and show up and say, yeah, I guess it's good enough to run, you know, 20th today, that's a win. So it's tough coming from winning a lot of races and having a shot to barely having a shot at all. And when you show up and you talk about it, and for years it was kind of frowned upon if you talked about the financial statements that you were in, and the sport didn't really like it. And you know, I've done a lot, and I'm like, there's no more hiding it. You know, I got to talk about it. If you don't talk about it, how is it going to be brought up and helped? You know, it's always going to be behind closed doors, and not many people are going to know. So, you know, my team now, Richard Petty Motorsports, is a great group of people. Is about 40 of us, you know, for example. And the best teams out there, there's 400 employees. So who has, you know, a better shot at winning races on a weekly basis? More resources, just more technical support, you know, obviously goes to the bigger team. So it's a struggle for us. And my guys, I don't know if there's a better group out there, that has fun on and off the racetrack. I'm sure every driver says that, but my guys are absolute blast. So we show up and we have the best time we can. And knowing 9 times out of 10, we're all going to be frustrated down in the dumps after the race, but we still don't give up. And that's, you know, that carries a long way with me of, you know, yeah, we might ride around 25th all day. That's how it is. But I come on the radio and I'm not giving up on you guys, and they fire back. We're not giving up either. We come down, caution comes out, we do a pit stop. Those guys are just as fired up as it was, you know, at the start of the race. So it's nice.
You know, you alluded to the importance of the car and the quality of the car in a race, but I guess I had never thought about, until you were saying it there, the helplessness you might feel when you just know this car isn't good enough.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And, you know, it's a fine line of how you talk. And it's not like I'm sitting here saying our cars are terrible and this is what we got and my guys are terrible. I think I got a great group of guys, and we do the best with what we got. That's all you can ask for. And, like this past weekend for the All-Star weekend, we won our first cup race, if you call it. It's the open. Doesn't matter. It doesn't go down on the resume. We won our open to get locked into the All-Star race to go fight for $1 million. And we ended up finishing 5th. I don't remember last time I had that shot in a while. And, you know, for the last month or so, I've been, you know, kind of just smirking, not really myself, not really that happy-go-lucky guy. And Saturday night, you finally seen some teeth with my smile, finally seen that emotion that was back. And I don't know how many texts I got or comments that I got. And like, that's the old Bubba. You know, that's what we miss and love seeing. And it just brought back that passion. And it was like okay, I can still do this. You know, we had that shot. And that was nice to see. So I'm excited going into this weekend. I haven't been excited for races in a while. Again, that's not me showing up not trying,
right?
Because you never know what can happen. But, you know, going in this weekend, it's like, all right, we have a really good shot at doing really well here. So we'll see what we can do.
Have you spoken to any of your peers about this, like after you've made these statements?
They've reached out. You know, for me, I've 25 years, and it's got me in trouble a lot, but I don't really talk to anybody. I keep all of my emotions inside, and I'll have a couple of, I wouldn't say mental breakdowns, throughout the years, but a couple blow ups throughout the year of where I've held so much in that it comes out, take it out on whoever's around me, and then move on, and okay, it's back to whatever. And then you get another handful, two handfuls of bad races, hold it all in and let it all out. And the next thing, the season's over, and you get time to kind of relax and regroup and refocus and then go back at it. And so it's kind of always like a repeating process. And, you know, that process just wore down those walls of holding it in, and it's tough to hold it in now.
It's interesting you say that you've never really talked to people much about these sorts of things. Do you have any idea for yourself why it is, or what it is that you hadn't been comfortable with about doing that?
I think it's just, trying to be independent. My sister, my we were all independent. My sister's probably the most independent of anybody, and you know, looking back on it and kind of realizing, you know, taking that different perspective and looking back, third person view, it's like you're just as independent as she is. You don't want the help. You know, growing up and running the truck series, we struggled for a little bit. It took us 21 races to win our first truck race. And Kyle Busch was, we had the meeting at the end of the year, and he was like, if you didn't win, you weren't coming back. And he was like, man, all you have to do is, if you're struggling with something, come up and ask me. I love helping out. It's why I'm your boss, is to help out. And I'm like, all right, yeah, totally. I'm not going to ask him. I need to figure it out on my own. He goes out there and can sit on the pole and run first all race in the same truck, same equipment. So can I. I'll figure it out. And next thing you know, we show up that next year and we win four races and had a shot at winning the championship. So I've just always – it was always my dad, myself, and Chris. That's the only people I talked to. That's the only people that – I didn't need any other help. And, you know, I would say this is how the car is. They would fix it, and that was it. I didn't need to talk to anybody else to help us how to get around there. And growing up, you're not with your dad and Chris anymore, but you're with your team and you talk with your team, and I don't need to reach out to anybody. I got my team to do that. So it's always been different for me, and maybe that's hurt me along the way, but that's just how I was made.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you said that your mother told you that it's best to talk about these things, mm-hmm. that she was not on that list of three people that you mentioned there. So like with dealing with race stuff, how does it go with you and trying to, you know, because your mom, again, is still separate from this.
Yeah. No, my mom, so the only reason she was separate, it was my dad and I and Chris at the racetrack, and then my mom and my sister at the basketball court.
Got you.
Yeah. So at the end of the every night, we'd come back together at dinner table and talk about our weekend or her game or my race. And but dealing with the racial side of things, it was, you know, she was a track star at University of Tennessee, so she she had went through it all, showing up and getting booed before she even raced. So I've gotten that too, and she's the biggest thing she says is don't fire back, because the media is going to point you out before they point anything else out.
The other thing I wonder is that how hard it is within NASCAR to get somebody to find people that relate to the particular struggle of being a black NASCAR driver. I don't want to say the black NASCAR driver, but I can't think of the other one.
Exactly. And people, it's funny. I got that pinned tweet on my Twitter account. It's talking about there's only one African-American driver. That's all you're going to hear about right now. It's me. Embrace it. Enjoy the journey. And a lot of people to this day still think I'm throwing the race card out there, and I'm simply telling people, media outlets start out with the black driver, and I'm telling them, like, that's, you're not going to stop hearing that for a while. I'm not calling myself the black driver. They are labeling me that, and I'm telling you that it's okay. So it's funny to read tweets to this day of people just firing out at me like, oh, you're throwing the race card out there, and I'm like, I'm actually not. I'm telling you, you're going to hear about it.
Well, the other thing is they know.
I know. Right? They, yeah. There's every no one single, else.
Even if there were, more, mm-hmm. the reality is, even if you don't tell people that you are black, they are aware at every moment that
absolutely.
This is the case.
Absolutely. So it's a tough road to walk, but, you know, nowadays I'm well received at the track. You know, fan appreciation is outstanding. Show up at driver intros and you're going up against the Jimmy Johnsons and Kevin Harvicks, the guys who have been there for a while, the Kyle Busch who gets booed the most. And I'm one of the loudest cheers. So, excuse me, that's special.
I always wonder how it's gone for your father on that, because I think that, you know, being married to a black woman and then having you as a son and then coming into this world has probably given him a whole different look at the world than he probably had prior.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it has. It's always been interesting to, you know, sit there and talk about, you know, where he's come up through and how he dealt with it all. But, you know, he was always there fighting for what was right. And that was the biggest thing. And sometimes it'd be too much, and he always wants to get even. And at times that called for it, at times it didn't, but he handled it. He tried to handle it the right way.
I admit, when I read your bio and saw that his name was Daryl, I assumed that he was the black parent, and then I saw your mother's name was Desiree.
Then you realized.
Yeah, then I was like, oh, okay, it goes in the other direction. All right, we got it. But I always think about, too, that, you know, like, you are Daryl Jr. Mm-hmm. And even in that time, even that putting his name on you, that's a hell of a statement, whether people realize it.
Yeah, I don't know if they got lazy or what, but it's like kind of the worst name. We got like two racing names, Daryl. We got three, Daryl, Wallace, and Jr. So, yeah. So I just go by Bubba now.
So what's it like for you on the internet, though? Because I am personally kind of notorious for fighting with people on the internet about all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I haven't, you know, I've gotten in trouble for firing back and whatnot. But I sit there and social media has had a lot to do with, you know, being, you know, depressed and going through all those emotions that I've been. You know, you sit there and read these comments and you're like, man, you know, I try not to let it get to me. And then you read it so much, you start telling yourself the same thing. That's where it all comes from. It's like, yeah, man, you're not good. You don't belong here. You suck. And, you know, you should get somebody else to drive a car. And you start becoming one of those haters. And it's like, Whoa. So it sucks that it's gone that far, but you know, before then I haven't had much, you know, energy or, you know, time to even want to fire back, lately, but before I've fired back a lot. You know, we've gotten in a couple instances where it's gotten personal with family and whatnot. It's gotten pretty serious and, karma ended up, good on my end, bad on that guy's end. But it's always fun to do. But you gotta walk a fine line with that too.
Did you notice kind of the arc of feedback? Cause I found that like when the group of people I was dealing with was small, it was mostly complimentary. And then once you get to like a certain level of visibility, now you get this whole different set of people. It's Absolutely. Not even anything about who you are as a person cause they don't know you. You're just Absolutely. Like an avatar on the screen.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think the biggest thing for me, and you go back to when, Danica Patrick came on the scene. You know, NASCAR, I kind of blame NASCAR a little bit. They throw it at you constantly. And circumstances are a little different between Danica and I. But you know, we go back to the equipment side of things and they're like, oh, check out Bubba Wallace this weekend. He's the next biggest thing coming up. And we run 25th. And then you go back the next week and, hey, check out Bubba Wallace. You know, he's this and that. We run 20th. And it's like, okay, people want winners. You know, people, you know, you talk about somebody, you know, they're doing something big, not somebody this. And then that turns in, oh, they're only doing it because he's black. And so it's like, here we go. Now it's, you know, it's, so I kind of blame NASCAR for, you know, it's like, let me create my own flame. You know, I don't need you guys to, you know, ignite it for me. I can get it going. You know, we're going to have some big moments. So, it'd be interesting to see how it all, you know, shook out. From day one, if we didn't have that kind of publicity, but then again, if we didn't, would I be here today? So it's kind of a catch-22, but it's just a fine line that you got to walk.
Yeah, I guess it's also kind of tricky for them because they are doing this in part because you're black, right? Mm-hmm. They have diversity initiatives Look, they got brands on these cars. They try to sell stuff and they want as many eyeballs as they can. You know,
as much as they don't want to agree to it, they got to.
Black people like Mellow Yellow too, right? Like, they want to get out here. They want to pitch this stuff. But I guess it does put you in a trick bag in that sense, in that what people are assuming that ties into their politics and everything else. Now you become like the you're the object of these things for them.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I sit there and think about, I see, you know, we have, the diversity side of motorsports is growing, especially in NASCAR, whether that's in the stands, you know, a part of the teams at the racetracks, whatever it is. And I sit there and I'll show up to the track and you'll see some African American fans that are wearing a Chase Elliott t-shirt or a Jimmy Johnson t-shirt. And part of me just thinks like, okay, one, do they know I'm in? Do they care?
Right.
Or are they like, this guy ain't any good? You know, right. it's like, I wonder what they think. And I sit there and wonder that a lot. Yesterday I was driving down the highway and I look over and I see, two African American girls in the car next to me. And I see an old, and we actually were texting about it earlier, an old Clint Bowyer t-shirt. And I'm like, it was really awesome. I wasn't even in the Cup Series yet when he was running this car. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, I give you that. You may have found that at a thrift store or wherever, but I'm like, I'm right here, you know? So there's still, I don't know if it's a lack of communication or if they're just like, at the end of the day, you know, I'm a critic of many sports. And if somebody's not good, then I ain't going to cheer for them.
Right.
So I think, I'm not going to say that's a black thing because I think it's everybody. Everybody wants to cheer for a winner, you know, and not everybody wants to cheer for an underdog. So it's different. But we look at results at the end of the day. I'm guilty of it. It's like, who's going to win this game? You give me two matchups. I go back and look at the results, and if they have a losing record, I'm not going to cheer for them.
Right.
You know?
I am curious about this one with the Clint Bowyer t-shirt on. Like, I do have, like, really? So you're deep into this for real?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's funny. I wasn't going to roll down the window. Hey, where'd you get that shirt? Or, hey, why don't you wear one of mine? You know? So it's different.
Like, that's the next level. Like, when I was in college, like, the racing jackets were the big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing to be in college, just wear the racing jackets. Another thing to have a Clint Bowyer t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, this indicates the sophistication in this sport that I did not expect you to have, young lady.
Yes, absolutely. So it was pretty funny. Pretty funny.
All right. We'll be back with more with Bubba Wallace in a minute, but first, are credit cards keeping you up at night? Interest rates in the double digits. Be smart and pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a fixed rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. You could save thousands in interest. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, LightStream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. Now, switch gears with you a little bit. I looked this up when we came in here. You play the drums.
I do. I have a drum set, yes.
Really? Okay, so you have a drum set.
Yeah, exactly.
Not quite the same thing as playing the drums.
That's it. Everybody's like, so you're a race car driver? Yes, I will agree to that 100%. You're a golfer too? No, I just happen to have a golf. I have a set of golf clubs. Same with drumming. I have a drum set.
Yeah, I say about golf. I don't play golf. Golf plays me.
Yes.
Golf plays me for a fool every time I get out
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. It's the worst. But yeah, I have a drum set at home. I've been playing. My first drum set was when I was 11 years old. We had electric kit. And then I bought my first acoustic kit, 2 years ago now. And, it's been a lot of fun. I've gotten a lot better, but I mean, I only get to play once a week. So it's tough.
Who are your drummers though? Like, who do you really rock with?
So mine are all new age heavy metal stuff. I don't know what year that was, but seventh grade, I heard Avenged Sevenfold for the first time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were screaming and whatnot, but it was easy for me. I had just, you know, joined the band in middle school and I was on the percussion side and it was easy for me to shut out the words. It still is easy for me to shut out the words. I pay attention to the words now. It might take me 5-10 times to understand what they're actually screaming.
Right.
But I could pick out the percussion side. I pick out the drums and the double bass and try to like, oh man, I can play this song. And that's how I always went about it. So I would find the coolest breakdown songs and then my genre just kept growing. And next thing you know, I'm, you know, bands that I listened to back in middle school were really good friends. And it's like, this is cool. This is really cool. So the drummers now, I mean, nobody would ever know of, because they're all underground and, drummers from Miss May I, Jared Boyd, Fit for a King, Jared Easterling, Matt Trainer, Bless the Fall. There's so many that I've been able to, you know, kind of lay the foundation. Aaron Gillespie is probably one of them as well that, you know, he was probably seventh grade early that I'm, you know, got in contact with him. They're all race fans. And it's like, I was seventh grade listening to you guys racing.
That's the wildest thing.
Yeah. Right? And then all of a sudden it comes full circle. They're like, yeah, man, we've been a fan of yours for years. It's like, same.
Yeah, that is
cool.
That is one of the wildest things about this. Once you get some visibility, they like what you do. You like what they do.
Yes.
They like, cause the thing, like for me, the coolest people that I meet are not the people who are the biggest now. It's like when I meet somebody that was the man when I was in like ninth grade.
Exactly. Same way. I get so excited of like when they all come to town, I am like pumped up. There's another show we're going to go to and just go hang out with them because at the end of the day, you know, they might seem all angry and stuff in their music, but they're down to earth, just badass cool people.
So you're just like metal is your thing.
Metal is my thing. I'm all music. Country depends on how far you go down the country road.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got me thinking about Old Town Road with the horses in the back.
Wrangle on your booty.
the country is probably this part I'm kind of different from, which is total opposite of being a NASCAR,
yes.
Right? Yeah. There's so many country concerts that we have at the track and people are like, hey, you going to concert tonight? Who's playing? They're like, such, such. I'm like, never heard of them. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah. See, my thing with heavy metal is, it's like, hey, man, I can't dance and that's fine. But I feel like heavy metal is if I can't dance, nobody's going to dance.
Yeah.
None of us are going to dance. We're all just going to move up and down, back and forth.
There's some different dancing. There's a lot of flailing of the arms and legs and whatnot. You get inside the pit. You better watch out. I've never been inside the pit, but, again, for me, being at the shows, I'll sit there side stage or in the crowd and I'll just watch the drummer the whole time. I'll just be sitting there, you know, nodding my head, whatever. And here comes the breakdown. Then you kind of get into it, but I'm always watching the drummer.
Yeah. I'm a big music dude. Like I used to be a music critic before I started doing all this. So that's me, right? Like I have a tendency to make the move. Like I'm staring at the band. I'm looking at that. And then at some point I got to looking at drummers and I was just like, oh, this is like low key hypnotic. What is going on here? Right. Cause these are four limbs. So you forget that it's like legs.
Yes.
Too, right.
Yes. And they're hitting eight different things at once. And you're like, how do they do that? And so for me, it's something that I love doing. And again, we go back to, if you don't love it, you won't do it. And I love drumming and trying to figure out how to be better. My feet need to move faster. My hands need to move faster. I need to have better rhythm. And it all comes with time. My buddy actually just texted me, earlier this week. Hey, you want to do a drum collab video with me? And I'm like, oh, absolutely not. Give me some time and maybe we will.
Yeah, that's like me. I want to get good enough at golf to play in celebrity tournaments. Yes. That's all I want to do because I can't show up.
Oh, I've done that once, and that is way more nerve-wracking than anything.
I can't do it. Oh, like, man. All I know is I'm going to show up, and I'm not going to just embarrass myself. I'm going to hold everybody up.
Absolutely.
And I can't throw this club in front of all these people.
No, no. I played in a Pro-AM tournament here. It was 2015 over in Connecticut. And it was the Travelers Pro AM. And I was with, Scheckler, Matt Lauer at the time. First tee box, 300 people lined up. And you're like, oh my God. And my swing isn't the greatest. It's gotten better since then, but I'm like, if I shank this thing and nail somebody in the head, what are you going to say? What are you going to do? So I'm up there on the tee box just shaking, and I get through it all, and it was fine. I had to yell four on my second shot. Two ladies were sitting off in the lawn, and I'm four. So it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, no, I can't. I'll be like, yeah, man, y'all might want to.
Yeah. Well, you keep going. Yeah.
I might want to break it out. I need a little room. I'm a little claustrophobic. Yes. I feel like y'all get a little tight.
It was intense.
So what's the coolest thing you've gotten to do in this job?
Oh, man. I think honestly, being up in a fighter jet, we have a partnership with the Air Force. So this was actually before the Air Force. You got a chance to go up. Thunderbirds come down to Daytona, and they give select rides. And finally was able to put my name in the hat in 2017, and got to go up. And I just, that feeling of going 500 miles an hour, taking off, doing all the rolls and whatnot. It was really cool. We pulled 8.6 or 9.2 G's or something like that, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for a person that handles G's each and every weekend, it was pretty cool where it's kind of ripping your face off. And so fast forward to now, I've gone up three times now, and my PR reps are always asking me, hey, would you be interested in flying again? Like, they say it like, do you really want to do that again? And I'm like, hell yes, I want to do it. Absolutely. Because there's no greater feeling like it. So I think that's probably the coolest thing.
Who's the coolest person you've had, know who you were that you didn't expect?
Man, that's tough.
I mean, other than me, of course.
Yeah, of course, you. Oh, that's tough. Man. I don't know. I've had a lot of people reach out and follow and whatnot, but that one person.
See, I tell you, that's a different confidence. I'm surprised by all of them. Yeah. Anybody knows, I'm like, really?
I know. I mean, same. That's why I'm like, everybody I've met has always been, I'm like, that's pretty cool. Like, all right, awesome. They pay attention.
So, like, what's it like for you now with your friends from when you were younger? Are you able to keep in touch with people, or how does that evolve for you?
Man, I haven't. Let's see, who have I talked to? I talked to maybe one or two people from school. It was different. And I was always gone, and I was always kind of on that island by myself, and I put myself there. So it was always tough. So once I got out of school, they all went to college and kind of remained close, and I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, we're doing something this weekend, and I'm like, I race 36 times out of the year, and it's on weekends, so y'all have fun. And so it's very rarely that I keep up with people from school.
Is it hard to meet people now? Like, is now that you are a visible person?
No, I mean, it's, I keep a tight circle. You got to in the sport. There's only a couple of us that, truly know each other and can give each other the crap on a bad day, but it's always fun meeting new fans and people and seeing how they interact. And some people are just like starstruck, and I sit there and I'm like, all right, man, calm down. It's all right. And it's like, you try to put yourself in their shoes, and it's like, I don't get excited over anything. If we go to say a movie premiere or whatnot, I've got to meet Kevin Hart twice. And people are like, how was he? Holy cow, I can't believe he died. I was like, yeah, it was cool. It was a good time. He's an awesome guy. I've gotten to go, the BET Awards and all that stuff. And I'm like, all right, cool, we've done that. So for me, it's always been different. I've never gotten, like, maybe if who celebrity crush of mine, Charlize Theron. I'm a huge fan of her. She was at the 500. I may have gotten a little nervous last year when she was there, but I don't know. I just, it's always just like everybody's like, okay, cool.
Now, you at the BET Awards, how many double takes did you give when you told people, yeah, I drive in NASCAR?
So this was back in 2010, but then I went in 2014. A lot of people were like, oh, no way. Really? all right. Okay. You, Bubba? Okay. Yeah.
Because that is, they'd be like, really, tell me more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, this is, because I think for people, it's not, I mean, cause, I mean, I take all kinds of places where black people are driving cars really fast. Like, it's the path to entry to NASCAR.
Yes.
That I think that people look at and be like, all right, so how'd you manage to
how
pull this
up? How did you get
up?
There? Yeah. Yeah. So it's different. You know, there's, black people don't have anybody to look up to or look at in a sport. And that's the main problem. That's the number one problem. And so for me, I can relate a little bit. I mean, I'm not as black, but I still have the roots. And for me, it's all about being different and having this opportunity. And how do we get that word out to the African-American community? And we do a lot of stuff. And I have my PR rep this year. She was like, holy cow, I didn't realize how busy they have you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm doing stuff pretty much each and every day.
Well,
so.
Well, you mentioned the as black part. One thing I did notice about you from the beginning that I think people would have questions about just from a distance because of where you're exposed is you seem to be under no delusions about whether or not you are black or not, though, which is kind of a huge thing, right?
Yeah.
And in this world you're in, I guess it's one thing where either you're going to be sure in that fact or it's going to consume you.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm darker than white. So you're going to get looked at. You're going to get treated differently until they're like, oh, you're Bubba. Oh, okay. It's like, yeah.
Oh, you see that happen.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, well, for sure. For sure. I'm always, you know, especially in this world today, you always have your guard up and it's sad. And you're always like, how are you going to be treated today? And 9 times out of 10, it's fine. But 100% of the time I go out and go into a restaurant or whatnot and I'll be with my mom and my sister who are black and you know, see how the interaction's going to be. And you're like, could have been a little better. But at the end of the day, it's fine because usually I keep going to the same local spots and like, oh, hey, you're back again. So it's a little different.
Yeah, that was always tricky. Sometimes the local spot is great. Sometimes it's not because they want to talk to you all the time.
Yes, that is true.
I got a place down the street, man. I can't go no more. I was like, dude, I just want to get my salad, man.
Yes,
I don't
that's
want to
right.
Talk about,
that's
I don't
right.
want to talk about the Knicks
I know,
today.
I just want to get away. I just let me enjoy time with family. So, but yeah, being in this world, and you got to accept it. You know, I accept it, and you know, people are like, well, he is half white too, and it's like, yes, you are right. I accept that too. I get along with everybody, black, white, purple, green, red, whatever it is. I'm a human, and that's how I relate to everybody.
That is Bubba Wallace, man, NASCAR driving the number 43 for Richard Petty Motorsports with his Coca-Cola directly in front of him.
That's
and
right.
Make sure everybody gets what they need out of this situation. Thank you so much for joining
yeah,
us
man.
Here, man. I really appreciate
it.
That.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, man. And thanks everybody here for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Kyrie Williams is handling everything behind the scenes today. Thank you, sir. Remember, check out the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.